and gentlemen, live from coast of the Carolinas by way of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. This is the moment sports betting fans around the world have been waiting for. It's time! Introducing the Fistful of Cash Podcast.
All right, guys, you are tuned into the newest episode of the Fistful of Cash Podcast. I am your host, Dale Lippin, in here with the co-hosts of all co-hosts. So, what is going on, man?
Nothing much, man. Ready for a big weekend. NFL college, finally have another UFC card on the horizon, so we're going to cover some of that. As you've alluded to on our Instagram, we have a special guest interview on this episode. This is a big Friday show for us. We have some huge announcements to make, as you guys will hear shortly. I'm hoping the audio sounds better. We made some investments as far as in enhancing our audio. So this is, hands down our biggest show to date. So I'm excited.
I am excited too. And I'm just going to jump right into it. I'm going to say this. This episode of the Fistful of Cash Podcast is brought to you by mybookie.ag. We're about to do our first ad read. Oh my goodness. Here we go. Mybookie.ag, guys. Go put promo code in. The promo code Give Me Cash. Give Me Cash at mybookie.ag. They will match your initial deposit. Listen to this. They're going to match your initial deposit 100% up to $1,000. So you go in, put your money down, and they will match it 100%. You got to go put promo code in Give Me Cash. Mybookie.ag will give our listeners a 100% deposit match. Wild. So this episode and the podcast is now being brought to you by mybookie.ag. You guys need to go there, check it out. Love the website. It's our personal book that we use. So the odds that we give you and have been giving you, those all come from mybookie.ag. And the posts that we put up on Instagram of all of our winning slips, those are actually screenshots from our slips from mybookie. So guys, go there, mybookie.ag, check it out. Promo code Give Me Cash, 100% deposit match on your first initial deposit. That's it, dude. That's the big announcement. I'm pumped. Right.
Yeah, we have our first book sponsor, our first sponsor in general. It's exciting. We're pumped. MyBookie is a great site. They offer, live odds. They offer up-to-the-minute lines. There's a lot of stuff to dig through on there, guys. Make sure you get on there. Use the promo code Gimme Cash, get your 100% match, and let's make this money.
All right. Well, speaking of making money, I'm pretty pumped up, man. We did great last weekend. I think that this weekend's going to be even better. And that being said, I would love to just get into some football picks because, like you said, we have a huge guest. We have UFC Tonight commentator Ken Flo Florian on the show today as well, which is going to be... Listen, I had an opportunity to talk to this guy for a while and just a stand-up dude. We had a great time, and I think you guys are going to absolutely love the interview. Like you said, we've made some investments as far as audio equipment goes and everything else. So hopefully, with the magnitude of this episode, everything meets the standards of of what you guys have come to expect, and we just want to meet and exceed. So let's get some picks in. Let's make some money this weekend, and let's get it going. College football, what do you like?
So we're going to start out with, I know we've covered Duke at least once on this show, I think twice actually, and we've also covered Pitt a few times, but they happen to play each other this weekend, and it's a really intriguing matchup to me. Duke's run game should be the deciding factor in this game. They average somewhere around 150 yards a game, and the Panthers struggle against the run, letting up about 190 yards per game. Pitt played a hell of a game against Notre Dame 2 weeks ago. But I feel like that took a lot out of them. I know they're coming off a bye. They have the rest. But Pat Narduzzi's not the greatest coach, and Pitt is not the greatest football team, so I don't feel like the bye week's going to help them out this much. Duke's coming off a hard-fought loss against a very underrated Virginia team last week. They've got a point to prove. I like the Blue Devils to squeak out a low scoring win here. The line opened at about five. I think it was Pitt plus five. I might have been inclined to take Pitt at that point, getting the 5 points, but with it being bet down to under a field goal, I'm going to ride with Duke here. We're going to take Duke minus 2.5 in this game.
Yeah, I like Duke so far this season. You know, this is really, I'm going to go ahead and say that they're probably, everybody not in that program, they're probably defying expectations of what was expected of them this season. Of course, obviously, as a player, you go into there, and, you know, if you buy into the system, you buy into the coaching staff, you buy into the people that are around you and surrounding you, you know, you think that you're capable of anything. And, you know, Duke, obviously not being known as a football school, guys that go there probably, you know, whether they want to admit it or not, probably have some internal reservations or thoughts about what is and isn't possible going to that school. But realistically, this season has really been a coming of age story for Duke football. They are just playing fantastic football. Pitt's pretty hit and miss. Like you said, you know, they either play great or they play fantastic, or they play, you know, they don't play that well at all. So I like Duke in this game just out of sheer consistency of what we've seen from them this season. I think they're going to be ready to go, and I think they're going to get the job done. And with that point spread being what it is, I think that Duke, you know, has more than a fair shot at covering those points for sure.
Yeah. Duke's really, like you said, you're going to hear a lot about Duke, guys. College basketball's right around the corner. Obviously, we're going to cover a lot of Duke Blue Devils with the recruits they brought in this year. You know, Zion Williamson, we're going to talk a lot about him. So you're going to hear a lot about Duke. But Duke football, like you said, they're surprising. They turned the corner last year. They won three in a row to end the season. They made a bowl game. But sitting right now at 5-2, it's going to be pretty tough for them to miss a bowl game. It's nice to see a school that doesn't dump money into their football program because everything goes toward their basketball program, put a team together and a bunch of guys who believe in each other, go out and win football games. I like the story. I like the team. I like the way they play. And just this Pitt, they're so hit or miss. They play very good teams, very good, and they play average teams, average and below average. So with that being said, that's the Pittsburgh way as far as football goes.
Absolutely.
I think Duke by a field goal, I think that's very reasonable.
Yeah, I like that line too. Now, that game, you know, is still going to be close. But we still like Duke in that. There is another game, though, and this is one that we're really excited about. And it's back-to-back weekends now that we're going to have one of these. We've got another max unit play.
Yeah. So last week I said max unit. I capped it at 3 on the Oklahoma game. I wish I wouldn't have. So this week I'm not going to. I'm just going to make this a 5-unit play. And this is something that is getting absolutely pounded right now. As of yesterday, it was Texas A&M plus 3, which part of me wishes we recorded 24 hours prior so I could have covered this when Texas A&M was plus 3, because I'm taking that field goal all day. Right now, I'm getting Texas A&M plus 1. My bookie's got them at plus 1 right now. There's no money line up on them. If you can find a money line play on, you know, if you're using a different site before you transfer over to my bookie, whatever you're doing, take the plus 1, take the money line, 5-unit play. Mississippi State cannot throw the ball. It is that simple. Nick Fitzgerald has been nothing short of pathetic when throwing the ball since he came back from his injury. They had extremely high hopes that in this new offense, this trend would change, but it's actually gotten worse. He was just absolutely terrible against LSU last week. He was 8-for-24 for 59 yards and 4 picks. They put up a stifling 3 points. In 3 of their last 4 games, they've scored 7 points against Kentucky, 6 points against Florida, and 3 points against LSU. The only game where they broke the 7-point mark was against an overrated and absolutely spiraling out of control Auburn team who has just been – it's a downhill slope for them. It's just getting worse. Now, on the other side, the team we're going with, A&M, so Mississippi State can't throw the ball. Their quarterback is a run-first kind of guy. A&M actually has a very underrated run defense. They held Snell and the Wildcats to 70 yards. They held Bama to 109 yards on the ground. – They've allowed 76 yards or less in their last three outings. A&M coming off a bye week. You know, I know how I said Pitt coming off a bye week really doesn't matter. A&M's a different caliber of a team. They have a different caliber coach. Jimbo Fisher's going to have his boys ready to play. He's going to have a solid game plan. And I can tell you what that game plan is going to be. It's going to be get up early, force Nick Fitzgerald to beat you through the air. And if you force him to throw, you're just going to go up even more because he's going to throw picks. He's going to turn the ball over, and he's going to, you know, he's not going to be able to control the clock. They're not going to pick up first downs. I can't tell you how much I like this Texas A&M play. They're 5-2. If you don't look at who they've played, you're thinking, oh, 5-2, that's not that great. They lost by 2 to Clemson, and they lost to Alabama. They lost to number 1 and number 2 in the country, and they should have beaten Clemson. Like, that was a very hard fought and well played game by A&M. Kellen Munn's talented. This defensive line is talented. Their wide receivers are huge. I love A&M in this game. 5-unit play, Texas A&M over Mississippi State.
It sounded like you just slapped the stamp down on this one.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's on it.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't have any, I mean, obviously, you know, your sales pitch is more than enough for this. There's nothing that I can add to that other than the fact that I think that a lot of the mistakes that Fitzgerald makes just comes from sheer panic and poor decision-making. You know, there's plenty of times where he could throw the ball or check down and he just doesn't. So I think that he's got a lot of growing up to do in addition to, you know, basic mechanics and everything else that, you know, a lot of other things that he needs to work on. But, you know, you've really created a succinct argument there. There's really no rebuttal or pushback on that. I love this Texas A&M play. I loved it, you know, when it was at 3. I love it at 1. I'm going to go ahead. I'll triple stamp your double stamp on this one. I love this play. And, you know, like you said, max unit play for sure, 100%. So let's get into NFL games that we like. One of the ones that we're really excited about is Carolina versus Baltimore. Carolina is actually a home dog coming into this game, which I think is wild. What do you like about that game?
Yeah, I'm just as confused as you are in Carolina being a home dog here. You're not going to get any complaints on my end. Give me Carolina and the free 2 points. These two teams are coming off totally opposite results. You know, we all know what happened to Baltimore last week. They lost in, you know, the most dramatic fashion in the NFL. The best kicker in arguably NFL history missing his first extra point to lose the game after blowing a double-digit lead on what I consider a productive game from Joe Flacco. And on the other hand, you've got Carolina, who made a tremendous rally to beat the Eagles after being down 21-3. They have all the momentum in the world, and they have Superman at home, where he's averaging 27 points per game this season. Time and time again, Cam makes the right throw through the air. Obviously his legs are dangerous, but when he needs to make the play through the air, he's doing it this season. He's coming up clutch a lot. The Ravens are 7-19-1 in their last 27 games in the month of October against the spread, while Carolina's coming in at 6-2 against the spread in their last 8 home games. Like I said, I'm confused. I don't get where this line's coming from, why Carolina's +2. That would mean at a mutual field that you're giving the Ravens -5 in Baltimore. You'd say the Ravens are an 8-point favorite. I don't get it. I like Carolina at home. I think that Cam does enough against this Baltimore defense to, if not, you know, lose a very close game. I think Carolina wins this game, but we're going to take Carolina and we're going to take the 2 points.
Yeah. I'm with you 100%. Again, you know, I'm pumped that you've come with all the information that you have. You know, I was sitting here with the against the spread stats and you just, you know, sucked them right off the page and put them on your own. I don't have anything for this one. I think Carolina, again, I'm not sure where this home dog status is coming from. You know, this is one of those ones though that I just want to watch it and, you know, sort of keep my eye on it. Maybe there's something with Greg Olsen that's going to pop up on Saturday or something like that. I'm not really sure where this is coming from. If somebody in Vegas or somebody, you know, has it somewhere else that, you know, that's making it the way that it is. My bookie's got it at +2. Every other, you know, site that I can find it on is at +2. So, you know, this is a line that isn't going to move. So you guys should be able to find this exactly how it is. If not, you know, exactly where we're getting our information from. And, you know, it's funny. I was going to pull up I got the against the spread stats here for you, Soup, but one of the cool things that my bookie does is they do it for you. So if you go to the game and click, there's a little ATS button and it actually gives you the stats. So if you don't have people like us telling you and you want to do it yourself, it's right there waiting for you. So we like Carolina. We like Carolina at home as a home dog, getting those 2 points. What's another NFL game that we're excited about this weekend?
All right. So we're going to come back to Pittsburgh. And we like the under in the Steelers Browns game, which is coming in at 48.5 right now. That's the most recent line that I saw on my bookie. There's going to be rain in the forecast, guys. And as we know, rain and football don't really mix as far as offense goes. It's a good Browns defense, a Steelers defense that actually seems to be turning the corner. I know that they've still been exposed throughout the season, but over their last three games against Baltimore, Atlanta, and Cincinnati, all three teams who, you know, don't have problem putting points on the board, the Steelers are only letting up 19 points per game. All these teams have much more production and more talent than the Cleveland Browns do on their offensive side of the ball. And the Browns are only averaging 16 points per game over their last three, playing a team like the Chargers, playing the Buccaneers, who are hands down the worst defense in the NFL. I think the weather and the Steelers' motivation to make a point after that embarrassing tie week one play a huge factor in this game. I think their defense plays well enough. I like the under 48.5. I'm going to say the Steelers win this game. We'll get something like 27-10. I don't believe in Baker Mayfield. I know he had a great start to his career with that comeback win and then the shootout in Oakland. But ever since then, he's just sputtered. Teams are figuring him out. And I think Mike Tomlin, I think the guys, you know, I think guys like Joe Hayden, I think he's going to be tough to beat for Baker Mayfield. I like their linebacking core. They seem to be coming together. I like JJ's little brother, TJ. He's a good player. That defensive line is tough with Cam Hayward. I think their defense does well in this game. They make a statement in front of the home fans, under 48.5 here.
Yeah, I will say this. Being from the Pittsburgh area, if it's going to be a rainy day, it's going to be one of two kind of rain. It's going to be straight down, can't see rain, or it's going to be whipping all around with the wind rain. And with, you know, with that being the case, this game is in Pittsburgh, right? Am I wrong here? Are they in Cleveland?
I'm pretty sure it's in Pittsburgh.
Okay. Before I go into a weather tangent, I want to make sure that it's at Pittsburgh. I'm pretty sure it was, but all of a sudden I had that little
hair. It's in Pittsburgh.
Okay, that's what I had the hair sticking up on the back of my
head. The first game they played was in Cleveland.
Okay, all right. Just make sure, yeah. So, yeah, the rain only goes two ways in Pittsburgh, straight down or it whips all around with the wind. And statistically, high wind games have lower actually affects the score more than rain itself. All that to say that it's not so much a matter of whether or not Pittsburgh is going to win the game. It's just by how much the under is going to hit, because they're still going to blow Cleveland out. It's just going to be – it's going to hit because they're not going to beat them 48-0. I like your play, the 27-10, somewhere around there. That seems about right. I think they're going to right the ship. I think they're going to make a statement coming back from that tie. I think that Baker is frustrated, especially after last week. It looked like his soul left his body at the end of that game. He just looked like he doesn't understand how to deal with losing the way he's going to be dealing with losing with Cleveland. And, you know, with Hugh Jackson saying he wants to, you know, take over more of the play calling, I still don't see that as being any sort of, you know, difference maker in a game like this. I think Pittsburgh wins this game. I think they win it easily. And I think that the under will still hit. And that's primarily due to the weather, not because of anything either team's going to do. So I like that. I like that play as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's all I've got for football, man. We're going to have, like I said, guys, we will have UFC picks on the show, which we will cover here in a little bit. And we will have UFC picks on Patreon this weekend. So we're going to take it down to two NFL and two college on the show, and two NFL and two college on Patreon. So that covers football for us. I know you are excited to get to this. I will let you do the introduction and get to this interview.
Dude, I am excited. Listen, you know, this is, if we're not annoying enough already, this episode, this is probably the most fanboy episode that we've had to date. You know, Kenny Florian is a legend in the mixed martial arts game, you know, and he's still on TV now, you know, UFC tonight. He does play by play, you know, whenever he's got to fill in for people. You've got the Anik and Florian podcast. The guy is just fantastic all the way from, you know, from when he was on the Ultimate Fighter to what he's doing currently. It's just absolutely awesome. It was one of those ones, I'm just going to go ahead and say it, where it was one of those ones as a lifelong mixed martial arts fan, and seeing the guy on TV and, you know, actually valuing his opinion and fight analysis, to be able to just sit down and chop it up with a guy about fights and about, you know, just everything that comes with that lifestyle and the analyst game and just all of that. It was kind of a surreal moment. You know, that doesn't happen that often. I'm not a guy that sits around and is, you know, I guess you would say flustered by another guy. You know, I like to think that, you know, he puts his pants on one leg at a time, just the same way I do. But it was a little bit of a fanboy moment for me. I'm not going to lie and pretend it wasn't. It was really cool. The interview was fantastic. We got some great insight. Asked him about some of these UFC Moncton picks that are coming up for this weekend. So I want to cut to those so you guys can get his breakdown. And then we'll be back after the interview. We'll break down the fights on what we like this weekend. And, you know, it's going to be, this is a fantastic show. And I hope you guys enjoy the interview with Kenny Florian. Here we go. UFC Tonight commentator, UFC legend. And he hosts BattleBots on Sci-Fi, which is still a thing. So, all right, without further ado, Kenny Florian, guys.
All right, guys, tune in to the newest episode of the Fistful of Cash podcast. It is an absolute honor. I'm going to try not to fanboy out when I'm talking to him. I've got the living legend himself, UFC Tonight commentator, BattleBots host, the whole nine. You can't turn on the TV without seeing this guy. Kenny, Ken Flo Florian, and I'm not lying, this is actually him. What's going on here?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. I'm just going to dive right in, because if I don't, I think I'm just going to sit here and laugh the whole time. All right. So I'll tell you how my day started out, and we'll go from there. So I talked to a gentleman today earlier that you have a shared history with, and that gentleman goes by the name of Chris Lieben.
And, oh, yeah. Okay.
So I wanted to get your thoughts on this new trend that we're seeing of, you know, guys moving into this bare knuckle fighting, you know, realm of combat sports. What are your thoughts on that?
You know what? If there was a guy that was cut out for that kind of a job, it was probably Chris Lieben, number one. The guy is tough as nails. He's got a big head. He's got big hands, and he likes to hurt people. So, and he can take a lot of damage himself. You know, it's tough because, you know, honestly, I would like to see Chris Lieben, you know, compete, you know, with gloves on, at least, you know, do an MMA fight, something like that. It's brutal. It's brutal on your body, you know, that's for sure. So there are a little easier ways to make money. You know, when it comes down to it, combat in general is going to be tough no matter what, whether you have boxing gloves on, little gloves on, no gloves on. It's all really tough. It's probably not for me, you know, I think Chris is one of those guys who could be very successful in it. It is a little different, though. You know, for me, what fascinated me was the fact that, you know, in mixed martial arts, you get to use it all. It really is one of those things that it's a chess battle. Every single move, every single thing can be countered. There's reversals. You can fight on the ground. You cannot fight on the ground. It's who's going to be able to impose their game. And with, you know, the strictly standing up and doing the bare knuckle thing, I think it's probably exciting for a lot of people. There's no doubt about it. But for me, I prefer the mixed martial arts, you know, type of combat myself.
Yeah, I'm with you. Having broken my hands before, it just seems like a death sentence for my hands at this point. If I were to try to, you know, wrap one of these things off somebody's grape without a glove on, I just prefer not to do that. I was surprised to see Johnny Hendricks go there, though. That doesn't, I mean,
no,
that's a big signing as far as the bare knuckle world is concerned, to see a guy, former welterweight champ, go there. I mean, do you think that stuff like that is going to, we're going to see a migration of guys trying to extend the career, going to stuff like that, or grappling tournaments, or things like that?
Well, I think you nailed it. I think it's more of an extension of their career, not necessarily their first option. You know, I think they are starting to put a lot of money behind these events, so that is really what's attracting these guys. If it was up to them, I think they would probably be fighting in one of the larger mixed martial arts organizations that would be paying them. But these guys are throwing around a lot of cash. So I think that's really what's making it attractive. And unfortunately for a lot of mixed martial arts fighters or professional athletes in general, right? I mean, we're typically not the best or not the most known for knowing how to manage our money. And that's the sad part of it. For me is that some of these guys have to. I hope that's not the case for a lot of them, but I know that that's the case for some of them at the least. So that's the hard part. And,
right.
You know, for these guys, they're very good at fighting. There's not a whole lot of other things they could do, and they have to do this to make a living. And, you know, I do hope that their heart is in it at the very least and that they're fighting with, you know, a lot of that passion that they showed earlier in their career, because that's when you start to get injuries, or you can get, you know, you can do serious harm to yourself. You know, we only have one brain, and you know, we've seen long-term effects from this, from football and combat sports, in the past, and hopefully that doesn't happen with a lot of my colleagues.
Yeah, no, I mean, and you know, you're segueing perfectly for me here, because this is what I wanted to ask you about. As far as extending careers go, you and Bisping in particular, there are not two guys in the game that have done a better job in transitioning from the cage to what comes next. I mean, you know, you were always known as like a very cerebral fighter and having a super high fight IQ and on top of being a very intelligent guy. Did you imagine at some point that the analyst thing was what's going to happen? And I mean, cause you've just sort of dove headfirst into this role and, you know, you're synonymous with that now.
Dale, I would love to tell you that it was my plan all along, but I would be lying through my teeth. No, I didn't think that would be an option. I always kind of envisioned that. And I think it's important to kind of have those dreams and aspirations to kind of put those vibes out there and see what happens. And also I just feel extremely fortunate that a lot of these opportunities have been put on my lap, and, you know, a lot of people love to criticize the UFC and you know, other organizations for not helping them out and this and that. I was lucky that I was at the right place at the right time, and they gave me those opportunities. You know, everyone from Dana White to Joe Silva and the powers that be on the production side of things for the UFC. And, you know, when I started over at ESPN and then I was brought over to Fox, and now it looks like, you know, the sport's moving back over to ESPN. I've just been very lucky that people have been pleased with my work and that I was given those initial opportunities. I was given a chance. I was given a shot. And, you know, I'm really grateful for that. You know, I really am, because at the end of the day, I love martial arts. I love talking about fighting. It's one of the most fascinating things for me. It never gets old. You know, a lot of interesting characters to talk about. And I just love seeing the evolution of the sport and seeing it improve in a lot of aspects, and seeing the fighters just get better and more technical, and seeing the sport change before me, and seeing, you know, where I came from and what we were talking about back then as far as fighting, and seeing where it is now. I think we're heading in the right direction on a technical level. The fighters are getting better. They are getting more dangerous. You know, they're using more weapons, and that's what makes it more exciting for me as an analyst and as a fan.
So having time away, you know, and being able to take a step back and dissect things, I think a lot of people realize no matter what your profession is, or even hobbies rather, if you're so close to your work for so long and then you get a chance to take a step back and then you reexamine it, a lot of times you're able to approach things with more success or in a different light. That being said,
yeah,
being in the analysis game as long as you've been now, is there anything that you wanted, like you'd want to go back and tell 20-year-old Kenny, like, you know, hey man, maybe we don't spar so hard every day, or, you know, what's a key piece of advice that he should have heard?
Dude, how about everything? Everything. I would probably change most of everything I've ever done. You know, I think the one thing, I think I would probably listen to myself a little bit more. I probably would use a little bit more intuition. Now, not to say that I didn't use it. Sometimes I used it and it was a failure. Sometimes I didn't and wish I did. So I think that was probably a part of it, you know. On the technical side of things, I think I would do things a lot differently. I was lucky that early on I kind of realized that, you know, hard sparring, there wasn't a whole lot of value for me. You know, like I knew either you're going to be tough or you're not. And I had some of those hard sparring sessions, no doubt about it. But, you know, I knew that technical sparring was the key, you know, and making it as realistic as possible without making it dangerous. On a daily basis, I thought was super important. So I was lucky that I had that. You know, I think really just being able to be around better coaching, you know, early on, I think would have helped me. I had some good coaches. I had a lot of people that helped me a lot throughout my career. Yeah, I mean, as I look back now, as 42-year-old Kenny looking back at 20-year-old Kenny, I would have changed a lot of things.
Right. I feel the same way like 6 months ago. Like if I could go back and tell six
exactly
months ago, yeah, but hey man,
same,
calm down.
Yeah.
All right, so let me ask you this. You know, I'm sure you can't go to the grocery store without somebody walking up to you and asking you about fights. But our podcast is based primarily on sports betting and in particular MMA betting. I mean, that's really our bread and butter. That's mm-hmm. sort of what we pride ourselves on. I'm just going to throw some fights at you real quick, and if you want to give me a pick or a pass, that'd be great. You cool with this?
Sure.
All right.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Coming weekend, Ozdemir versus Anthony Smith. How do you feel about that?
That's a tricky one. Both guys have serious knockout power. We haven't seen Ozdemir in a little while. Anthony Smith has been way more active. I feel like he's more dangerous from the outside, whereas Ozdemir is more dangerous on the inside, particularly with those uppercuts and hooks. If I had to make a choice right now, I would go with Ozdemir for the win.
I'm with you on that. I feel like he's got to be the play until shown otherwise. Smith has been a little up and down, and, you know, I love Rashad and Shogun, but they're sort of on the tail end, and Ozdemir's,
right.
I feel like, in his prime, so I'm going with him as well. Here's the switch-up with the whole Khabib thing, and I'm purposely avoiding the Khabib fiasco because I don't want to give that any more light. Michael Johnson stepping in to take on Artem Lobov.
Yeah.
Am I wrong in thinking that that's like a sneaky bad fight for Johnson? Because he's not done well with guys that tend to continually walk forward and apply endless pressure like Lobov does. I feel like this line is closer than maybe it should be, or am I just looking too hard for an underdog here?
Well, I would say that given the fact that Michael Johnson is taking the fight on relatively short notice, I think there's some truth to what you're saying. I think given a full camp, given a full 8 weeks for Michael Johnson to prepare for Artem Lobov, I think he's a bad matchup for Lobov based on his style. I think he has much faster hands than Lobov. I think Lobov doesn't have great head movement. He doesn't have great footwork. He kind of plods forward. And he's there to be hit. And Michael Johnson, I just think he's going to be the faster guy. I think he hits harder as well. I think it could get interesting, I agree, in that third round if Lobov is still in front of him, given the fact that 145 is a new weight class for him. It's not an easy weight cut for Michael Johnson. So I think it could get interesting if this fight goes late. But I do think Michael Johnson has a style that could give a lot of problems for Lobov, but you're right. Traditionally, the guys who can pressure him have given him trouble. I just don't think Lobov is defensively responsible to be that guy.
You have said more nice things about Artem Lobov than I think anybody has said in the guy fighting in the UFC. So I'm sure he's going to absolutely love this if he ever listens to
right.
it. Oh, yeah, I'm
right.
Sorry. All right. The speed round here. All right. So Rockhold's out. Souza's in. So you got Jacare versus Weidman. What do you like?
I think Weidman, I think just based on his wrestling background, I think he's going to be able to keep it on the feet and either score takedowns and get on top of Jacare, where Jacare is a little less scary. Yeah, I like Weidman in that fight.
All right, Adesanya versus Brunson.
Geez, you know, Brunson's so hit or miss. I got to go with Adesanya. I think this guy is just amazing on the feet.
I think Brunson carries his hands way too low, man, and he walks that chin up. It drives me nuts. I just constantly am, like, screaming at the TV, chin down, hands up. I feel like it's, like,
I
day
agree.
One in the gym. It drives me nuts.
100%.
All right, so Frankie Edgar, Korean Zombie. Is this the fight of the year? Because I feel like nobody's talking about this fight.
I know it. I know it. And it's such a great fight. Korean Zombie, very exciting, very aggressive, taking on Frankie Edgar, who is very much the same. You know, Frankie Edgar, he's a little bit later in his career, but I still think he's got it. I think he takes this one against the Korean Zombie.
Yeah, I think Zombie's just too inactive at this point to keep with a guy, keep up with a guy that's as active as Frankie is. All right.
Yep.
Cowboy versus Mike Perry.
This is very interesting. Mike Perry has just insane power. He's a guy who could put your lights out at any moment. Donald Cerrone, the more technical guy, he's going to be taller. He's going to be able to, or should be able to, keep Mike Perry on the outside. But not an easy one, man. I don't know. I have to, I'm going to pass on this one as far as giving a prediction. I got to do more homework on these guys, but, not to say I don't know them. I just would like to see a little bit more video before I give a prediction.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, honestly, I think the X factor in it is going to be the first 3 minutes. How quick can Cowboy get started? If he goes slow, it's going to be a bad night for him. All right. I know he's your boy, and I feel like I already know the answer anyway, but DC versus Derek Lewis.
Yeah, you know what? Listen, boy or not, I think that he's just a bad matchup for Derek Lewis. He needs to go in there. Don't even try to trade with Derek Lewis. Put Lewis on his back. You know, cash that check and get out of there.
Yeah, I mean, he needs to just go ahead and just see if Khabib will just, like, throw him the playbook that he used to beat Conor.
Exactly.
And just say, hey,
exactly.
There you go. You get to the logo. 100%. For an angle.
Yep.
That's all you gotta do. All right, man. We're over time. You've been super generous. I don't want to keep you. I know you got stuff to do. I mean, I don't know if there's a guy as busy as you are, so I want to respect that. So I appreciate you taking the time. I appreciate you talking, and this has been an absolute treat.
An absolute pleasure for me, man. And, I'm looking forward to hearing the podcast.
All right, guys. I hope you guys enjoyed the interview with Kenny Florian. Like I said, it was a good time. Absolutely had a blast talking to him. He will be back on the show here at some point, so that's always something to look forward to. And, if you haven't already, go to Instagram, show them some love, and, let them know that you appreciate them coming on the show, all that kind of good stuff. That helps build the show, helps build the community. And, you know, it's just, like we said, we want to take the opportunity when we can to help people that help us, and then, you know, reach forward and pay it forward and help other people. So I hope you guys enjoyed that interview, but all that to say, we got some fights this weekend, baby. I'm pumped up. This is a card full of killers. I'm super excited. I'm going to let you say something, Soup. Otherwise, I'm just going to keep talking and I won't stop.
No, I just wanted to touch on the Kenny Florian interview. Yeah. For those of you guys that know, like, our family, so Kenny Florian was one of the original Ultimate Fighters. I mean, on, you know, the show The Ultimate Fighter Season 1, he was on the original cast. I believe that aired, like, I was probably 13 or 14 years old. So Kenny Florian is part of the original group who really put UFC in the general public's eye. I know it had a lot to do with that Stephen Bonner Forrest Griffin fight at the end of The Ultimate Fighter, but guys like Kenny Florian, you know, guys like, as he mentioned, Chris Leben, these guys were, you know, the original, as far as my generation goes, these were the original guys who really brought light to the combat sports and really brought it to the public eye and gave us a chance to enjoy it. So this was a huge moment for, I know, not only for you getting to interview him, but the fact that I co-host a podcast that just had Kenny Florian on for interview. I normally don't fanboy out, but I'm going to. It's an awesome moment. I'm really glad that he took time out of his day to talk to you. And like he alluded to, we do have an interview with Chris Lieben coming up. So we have another Ultimate Fighter Season 1 alumni. A lot of big stuff, man. And this to all of our listeners, this isn't possible without you guys. Nobody's going to want to come and listen to a podcast that only has two listeners. These guys do their research. They listen to our podcast. They see our views and stuff. We owe this to you guys to give us the ability to talk to guys like Chris Lieben, guys like Kenny Florian, guys like even Shorty Torres, you know, who was our first guest who really paved the way for all these other guys to come on. I just wanted to say thank you to our listeners. I appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, I mean, it is a domino effect. Because like you said, they get on and they look and they see, well, has anybody been on the show before? Who are these guys? And they listen, and you know, it's got to be a thing. But we're consistently, you know, we don't just say it online. We are the number one MMA betting podcast on iTunes. We're consistently in the top 15 of sports betting. That's because of this fan base. That's because of this community. You know, however you stumbled upon us, you may think that this might be some little bush league operation, and maybe to an extent it is. However, this community has shown itself to be fiercely loyal, and you know, our listens are, I can almost handicap our listens based upon, you know, what events are happening for the weekend and everything else. I mean, it's just fantastic. And it's something that, you know, we had set goals when this first started. We set 6 month goals and we set year goals, and we surpassed our year goals last month. So it's something, it's like we shot way too low, and everything continues to get better. You know, everybody loves a good bloodbath. Everybody loves a good, violent, aggressive fighter. Again, he's not just the host of a show. You guys got to get on, you know, get on UFC Fight Pass. Hell, watch highlight videos on YouTube. Doesn't matter. You check out Kenny Florian. People have said for years he's had the sharpest elbows that ever existed in MMA. The guy literally was slicing people open like he had katanas on the tips of his elbows. It just absolute bloodbath everywhere he goes. Speaking of absolute killers, this weekend, a stacked card. The UFC always puts on great cards whenever they go to Canada. This one is no different, despite, you know, maybe not household name power. There is going to be a ton of great fights on this card. I'm going to go ahead and start with, one of the first picks I want to cover on this fight, or on this card rather, has a local guy on it. The Canadian Nordine Talib taking on Sean Strickland. This is a battle of two elite level strikers, two guys that are looking to make a name for themselves. You know, Nordine Talib is forward, 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 pressure, pressure, pressure. He does not stop. And Sean Strickland is one of like those guys that ascribes to the slow is smooth, smooth is fast lifestyle. He doesn't ever look riled up. He doesn't ever look intimidated. He just goes out there and just stone face American psycho killer faces his opponents and then picks them apart. I mean, the guy's 19-3. He does not play around. He is a stone cold killer, but he's coming up against a piece of Canadian granite in Nordine Talib. It's going to be a fantastic fight, and it's the first fight I want to talk about tonight.
Go get it.
Okay, you just gonna let me go at it? All right, cool.
Yeah, go ahead. You're on a roll.
No, okay. So no. I mean, here's what it is. So Talib has. He's compact. He's got great stand up. He's a very underrated kickboxer. And the thing about him though, is he stays compact and his fundamentals are tight. They are sound. So when you get Nordine Talib in front of you, it's like the carbon copy of what you're supposed to be doing when you're in the gym, you know, like what a straight right looks like, what a straight, you know, what a jab, what a check hook, what, you know, all of these things. He literally throws things from a technical proficiency standpoint that you don't see in a lot of guys. So when he comes at you, you know, it's basically like you're fighting the computer bot, you know, and when you're playing a game that has AI, you're fighting the bot. He does everything crisp. He does everything the way he's supposed to. And he's got a gas tank, which is surprising for how muscular he is and how, compact he is to make the weight that he does. He's very aggressive. He's got a decent chin. I wish it was better. And he is susceptible to submissions. He's been submitted a couple times. Claudio Silva got him with a rear naked choke. It is possible. And Strickland is slick. But Strickland, in my opinion, despite being a very, very accomplished and aggressive and just a sound fighter, has shown himself to be a bit of a head case at times, where if he can't get going early or he doesn't see the level of success he anticipates at the level or at the time he expects it to show up, he will sort of shut it down and go into cruise control. He has a hard time turning on the aggression later in the fights. He sort of depends on himself to be accurate and powerful early. And if he's not, then the fights, if they go past, you know, a round and a half, he tends to call it in and it's there for the taking. Now, 19-3 is nothing to scoff at. The guy does have the ability to win fights even in the later rounds, but he does sort of slow it down and shut it down if it's not going the way he, you know, sees it to be. And especially as of late, he's been sort of hit and miss with his last couple of fights in the UFC. It's where those losses came from. He was undefeated for a very long time. I think Nordine Tlaib does enough to get it done in front of the hometown crowd. Not necessarily hometown Canada, but just hometown in country. So home country crowd, I think he can get it done either by decision or knockout. I'm not sure. But, you know, my bookie's got the line coming in pretty even. Tlaib's coming in at a minus 105. I like him in that fight. I like that line. I'm just going to money line pick Tlaib to win this fight.
Yeah, I like it. We talked about this off air because as everybody who listens know, you know, football's my thing. UFC is your thing. But we both enjoy the opposite sport. We both have opinions on it, but we let the other ride. We talked about this, about Tlaib's nonstop pressure and his ability to kick and him being an underrated kickboxer and Strickland's just straight passiveness and how that's going to play against him in this fight. I think you hit the nail on the head. I like Tlaib as the slight underdog at a minus 105. I think that's the right play.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of passiveness, this brings me to the next fight, and you know, this is the one I really want to cover and want to get to. We're going from a fight where there might be a passive fighter to a fight where there is guaranteed to be no passive fighter whatsoever, and that is the main event of this card. Now, keep in mind, guys, it's a Fox Sports 1 card. The one critical thing I have to say about these Fox Sports 1 cards is the fact that they take forever. So if you're watching this main event, which is going to be Volkan Oezdemir versus Anthony Lionheart Smith, it's probably going to be 1 o'clock in the morning when you're watching it. If you stay up to watch it, that's what time it's going to be on. These FS1 cards are paced horrendously, but I promise you, if you stay up, you are going to be in for a treat. It is going to be a cupcake of violence, complete with whatever kind of sprinkles and icing you want on it. This fight will not and cannot, listen to me here, will not and cannot be disappointing. It is going to be an app for however long it lasts. And it's probably not going to last that long. It's going to be a Mozart level symphony of violence between these two guys. It's going to be fantastic. Soup, who do you like in this fight?
So I picked on Tuesday. I said Lionheart by submission in the third round. Obviously, that was just, I'm just throwing it out there as a crazy prop bet. When it comes down to it, I think it comes down to the initial burst from Oezdemir. If Anthony Smith can survive that, I don't know if he can, and I don't know if he will. If I had to pick a winner, I'd probably go with Oezdemir just because of his pedigree and his experience. But I know that we both agree on the play that you're about to present. So I'll let you handle this one. But if I had to pick a winner, it'd be Oezdemir.
Yeah, I think that Oezdemir is going to be the winner in this fight. That's not our play, though. The play is under a round and a half. Ozdemir's got 12 first-round finishes. Anthony Smith is saying he's going to go in there and demolish Oezdemir to the point where people are going to wonder why he was even in the same cage as him, which is big words. However, it's not often that a guy says some nonsense like that, and I actually believe it to be so. I actually believe that's what Anthony Smith feels in his heart, and I think he knows that he has got to get Oezdemir out of there. However, if he's smart, he weathers the storm. He gets this to, like, the second round. He gets it into the middle of the second round, allows Oezdemir to tire himself out the same way he did when he fought Daniel Cormier, and then decides to go after him, I just don't think that Ozdemir is going to allow him to disengage for that long. I mean, we're talking about if you make it past the second round, that's literally holding a guy that's trying to murder you at bay for 10 minutes. I don't think that that's what's going to happen here. I think that however it happens, Ozdemir is going to push the tempo. You know, watching videos of him online, training for this fight, and just knowing that the guy's propensity to finish in the first round, I think this is going to be a fight in which he goes in there and he's aggressive and pushes the pace to the point where somebody's got to finish the fight at some point, and it's going to happen early. A round and a half is giving you, you know, 7 minutes and 30 seconds of, you know, violence of two. Keep in mind, these guys are fighting at 205 pounds. That's what they're going to weigh in at. That when they're going to weigh in at, that's not what they're going to fight at. So tomorrow, these guys are going to weigh in at 205 pounds, but they're probably going to be fighting closer to 230, 225 area. So you're talking about two, you know, 6 foot three, 6 foot four guys, respectively, that weigh 220 plus pounds swinging bombs at each other. And, you know, between Anthony Smith's great Muay Thai skills, his great kicks, elbows, you've got the uppercuts of Ozdemir. You've got, you know, this real sharp, crisp boxing and hooks. The only thing that might make this fight go past a round and a half is the fact that both these guys have great chins, despite being wanton for violence. They both have pretty good chins, but I just don't see it going past a round and a half. The only way it does is if one of them comes out and they were bullshitting the whole time and they're going to be super timid, which I don't see happening, but stranger things have happened in the octagon. Just look at, what was it, when John Jones fought Rashad Evans. Those guys were talking about like how they were going to eat each other's children, and then they came out there and sparred for five rounds. It doesn't really matter, though. I think this fight ends in under a round and a half. That's my play. Doesn't matter who wins, under a round and a half. That's it. Put the stamp on it. It's over with.
To do a quick rundown for you guys, because I know a lot of you guys listen to this on your commute to work and stuff, and I know it's hard to keep track of the picks as we go over them, especially with the interview in between. The picks for this week on the podcast, we went Duke minus 2.5 versus Pitt. We went a 5-unit play on Texas A&M plus one. We'll say 5-unit play, Texas A&M plus one, not money line, plus one. Texas A&M, 5 units against Ole Miss. We went with the Steelers and Browns under 48.5. We went with Carolina plus two at home against the Ravens. We went with Tlaib at a minus 105 to win his fight. And we went with the under 1.5 in the Ozdemir and Smith fight. So just, I know that's going to make it easier on a lot of you guys. So you're not trying to remember this stuff over, you know, an hour long episode with the interview in between. So those are our picks for this week. We are going to have more on the Patreon page. Dale, if you've got a minute, I've got something NBA related that I would like to touch on.
I got time.
So the first time we really spoke about NBA, one second, guys, hold on.
You wet in a whistle right now.
Yeah. So the first time we spoke about NBA, really, it was a real brief 5-minute, I don't want to say argument, we'll say discussion. And I'm not going to point fingers and say who, but somebody had the nerve to say that Jimmy Butler wasn't important.
I said that.
Well, here's the thing. The Houston Rockets seem to disagree. The Houston Rockets are offering 4 first-round picks for Jimmy Butler.
Okay.
And the Minnesota Timberwolves have not accepted. So there's at least two teams that think that Jimmy Butler is pretty damn important. And so far through the season, he's averaging 24 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, and 4 steals. 4 steals. That's like John Stockton shit right there. I mean, 4 steals a game is outrageous.
Easy.
4 first-round picks for one player.
Okay. Now,
that's the max. You can't offer the max amount of first-round picks you're allowed to offer in a deal is 4 first-round picks. So this is a max offer.
Okay.
As far as draft picks go, you can't offer anything better.
Okay. Now, how does the NBA draft work? Is it a lottery system?
Right. Yeah, it has lottery picks. Correct.
Okay. All right. So in order for you to have draft picks, or the amount of – or where you're standing in the draft comes – from is based solely on your record, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So if you're Houston and you're going to finish in the top 3 of the Western Conference, are you going to be more likely to pick at the beginning of the draft or at the end of the round?
At the end of the round.
Okay. Listen, all right. So
you're still getting offered four top 30 players.
Let me make my point.
Okay. I'm listening.
All right. That being said, have they disclosed what years these draft picks are coming out of?
Yeah. Well, so they can't be back-to-back drafts and it can't be outside of 7 years. So it'll have to be every other year. So it'll be next year. Skip a year, the year after that, skip a year after that, skip a year, year after that, skip a year after that. That's the way it has to be because you can't offer back-to-back first round picks.
Okay. So they're basically offering a kid that's not even in high school yet for Jimmy Butler.
Right. You're acting like you're not going to get talent. This is setting Minnesota up to use these picks as trade bait to dump a guy like Georges Jiang, who's getting paid $48 million over his contract. This is setting Minnesota up for their future if they want to hold on to these picks. Because you got guys, I mean, look at Draymond Green. He was drafted, what, like 35th overall? You got guys like Tiny Nate Archibald, who went, in the low 20s. Tony Parker, who went 28th overall. There's so much talent to be found in the bottom of the first round in NBA drafts.
So it's a diamond in the rough situation.
Manu Ginobili went 57th. Dennis Rodman went 27th. There's so much talent to be had.
So, I mean, essentially, four diamond in the rough. Okay, so Jimmy Butler is worth four Mega Millions lottery tickets.
Okay, yeah. One in 300 million.
How many people make the NBA?
A year? 60. Yeah.
Okay.
60 players get drafted, and then you get unsigned guys or undrafted guys.
So what are your odds? What are the odds of making it to the NBA as a high school kid? About the same as winning the lottery. So Jimmy Butler's worth four lottery tickets.
You're getting so far away. The only thing you can compare him to are the other guys in the draft. You're comparing him to every high school student in America. That's so far away from the argument that makes no sense.
What are you talking about? You're talking about you're trading him for draft picks. These are people that aren't even in the league yet. And then it's got to be every other year. So we're talking about guys that aren't even in the league or they're not even in high school.
That doesn't matter. When they use that draft pick, they are going to be top 30 players in the country. They're going to be one of the 30 best players in the world. Not even country, because you have international guys. It's going to be a top 30 player in the world.
That isn't currently in the NBA.
Correct. Yes, a top 30 player in the world to pick from. Yes.
Who got drafted before Michael Jordan?
Sam Bowie.
Okay. He had a good career.
What are you getting at there?
I'm just saying number one guys don't work out.
Right.
Number 29, 30, or even less likely to work out.
So what, you would just get rid of the draft and just everybody have an auction bid on free agents?
No, not at all.
You have to draft. Not at all. That's part of the draft.
What I'm saying is,
just as likely the number one guy not working out, a number 30 guy might work out. So that's a counter argument against yourself.
Listen, you've got guys
in the lottery who don't work out.
I understand that you love the underdog story because you're a Tom Brady guy. I get that. All I'm saying is Jimmy Butler isn't worth four first round picks. I'm not saying that he's not an elite level talent. He absolutely is. But to just sit there and act like you're Kawhi Leonard is just ludicrous. You're not that big a deal, man. And if anything, he has shown himself to be a cancerous cyst in a locker room. Every team he goes to falls apart from the inside out.
They loved them in Chicago.
They got rid of them.
I think Karl Anthony Towns is the cancer in this locker room because Jimmy Butler is paid to play basketball. It is his job. Jimmy Butler shows up to do his job. And from all the reports, Cat is – this is a joke to him. He's getting paid millions to play a game. What does he care? Jimmy Butler is the ultimate underdog. He was a homeless teenager sleeping on a bench with no college offers.
Oh, no.
He is there to get to. Dude, Jimmy Butler is a very, very good basketball player. He's a top 20 basketball player in the NBA.
I'm not saying that he's not a good basketball player. I'm just saying he's not what you're making him out to be.
He's top 20 in the NBA.
That's your opinion. I'm not. This is approaching an hour long episode.
Yeah, I can make it 2 hours if you want to talk about Jimmy Butler.
No, I don't. All right, guys. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Appreciate you. All of the odds that we use today, again, can be found on MyBookie. Go to MyBookie.ag. Use promo code GiveMeCash. Get 100% deposit on, or 100% match on your initial deposit. We just placed a max unit bet. You want to make that max even more max? Go to MyBookie.ag. Put in promo code GiveMeCash and get 100% match on your initial deposit. That's it for me. Wish you guys the best this weekend. Good luck, everybody, and I'll see everybody on Tuesday if I don't talk to you on social media before then. Take care, guys.
As always, guys, from the first official Pro Jimmy Butler podcast, clear eyes, full fist, can't lose.
Credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.